So the fact that as a business, you have a presence on social media, that you're going to appear in someone's newsfeed, that's a privilege. And you're not there to sell. Something that I always stress and I always say to people is that to get the best results out of social media, you don't sell. You're not on social media to sell to your customers. You're there to build a relationship. You're there to build, nurture that trust, that bond. And if you do that correctly, you won't even need to sell to your customers because they will choose to buy from you. It's a very subtle difference. But if you have that mindset, then it will completely change your marketing strategy.
Welcome to the Marketing Your Practice podcast, where we help natural health practitioners and wellness experts build profitable, predictable, and enjoyable practices. Each week, we share simple, effective, easily actionable, and proven heart-centered marketing strategies. And now your hosts, Dr. Angus Pike and Dr. Tony Rose.
Welcome to the Marketing Your Practice podcast, episode 24. With the wonderful David Glenwright from the UK. He is one of only a handful of experts, social media experts trained by Facebook. He is a social media whiz from JC Social. And we get into a conversation with David about, is a business page dead? Can we actually drive organic traffic to our business, to our practice? Should we be using social media? How should we be using it? We dive into some Instagram things, some tricks and tips on Instagram, how to increase your following organically. David also touches on where he feels Instagram's going and where it might be going with some changes that are happening. Really great conversation.
This is a masterclass where we set Dave the challenge that if I was opening up a new practice from day one, how would we go about it? What platform would I choose? How often would I post? What kind of content would I post? And full of actionable nuts and bolts. So if you're wanting to know how you can get the best out of your social media reach, actually have people coming in to see you, then you're going to love this one. So jump on in and enjoy. Our English counterpart, David Glenwright. See you in there.
David Glenwright, welcome to the Marketing Your Practice podcast. Great to see you.
Great to see you guys as well.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us. You are the man about town, old man Glenners, really great to have you on the show. We really want to dive into your expertise in the social world, being a social media expert, Facebook expert. And I know that you've got a little bit of exciting news for us as we were just chatting beforehand. But let's dive in. We want to really pick your brains about what people should be doing socially. You know, Mark Zuckerberg recently, or a few months ago now, came out and said, no, we're going to not really play the game for businesses. We're going to do it all for friends and family. But what does that mean? How do we dive in there? What should we be doing? What shouldn't we be doing? All these questions come up for me about the world of social. So really happy to have you here.
And let's create a framework.
Yeah, let's do that.
In around, so if we're starting off, David, that someone's starting off, we're going to use an example as a chiropractic practice. Fresh into practice, no presence as far as a business page on Instagram, on Facebook, or whatever the social pipelines. Where do we start? Like, where's our guidance if someone's starting from fresh? So let's throw the line out there and what are your thoughts on that?
Well, if you're starting from fresh, before you even think about what social media platforms you're going to be on and what you're going to be saying and when you're going to be posting, you need to answer a very simple question. Who are you targeting? And that's a question that people often skip. They kind of hurry into this. Oh, well, I hear Snapchat is the big thing and Instagram's the big thing. I need to be on that. My son, my daughter is using Twitter. I need to be doing that. You need to consider your audience, though. And you need to not only consider who your audience are, but what their behaviors are, what it is that they're doing on social media. I think one of the biggest mistakes that marketers make is that they assume that people are on social media to be sold to, whereas the reality is that's not the case. I'm not on social media to see adverts from my brands. I'm not there to be sold to. I'm there to engage with my friends, my family, my loved ones. I want to see content that is interesting and relevant to me. And I think Mark Zuckerberg's comments and actions over the course of this year about that shift on focus away from brands, away from businesses, back onto friends and family, isn't necessarily a comment that businesses aren't welcome on social media, but rather the way businesses behave on social media need to change. I think it's actually a step backwards. I think when we look back into the annals of history around social media, and it really is, it's turning into the annals now. Social media has been around for close to 20 years. Yeah. It's ancient history now. There was once upon a time a platform around called Friends Reunited. I mention this to people every now and then. They go, oh, yeah, Friends Reunited. The idea of the platform was that it was about connecting people with their old school friends, their old work colleagues. It was about digitizing existing social circles. MySpace, Bebo, and indeed Facebook when it first started. They were all about digitizing existing communities and networks. The idea that businesses have and brands and organizations can play a role in this only came along at a later date. So the fact that as a business you have a presence on social media, that you're going to appear in someone's newsfeed, that's a privilege. And you're not there to sell. Something that I always stress and I always say to people is that to get the best results out of social media, you don't sell. You're not on social media to sell to your customers. You're there to build a relationship. You're there to build, nurture that trust, that bond. And if you do that correctly, you won't even need to sell to your customers because they will choose to buy from you. It's a very subtle difference. But if you have that mindset, then it will completely change your marketing strategy. Now, to take it back to your question as to, well, where do you start? What platforms do you start? The temptation is to run into the big platforms to get your message out there as quickly as possible. But if we're looking at this idea of building and nurturing a relationship with our audience, we need to think, where do they behave? Where are they going to be most comfortable interacting with a brand like mine? So for example, if as a chiropractic clinic, you were focusing specifically on sport recovery. So focusing on younger athletes looking to recover from injuries, then immediately you're looking at a younger audience. So your interest would shift more towards Instagram rather than Facebook, because Instagram does have a stronger hold and dominance on the under 30 bracket. Whereas if you're looking at an older demographic, maybe you're looking 40, 50 plus, then Facebook would be the more natural home. So it's not so much about which platforms are the biggest, where you're going to be able to get the message out quickest and fastest, but where is your audience? Where do they exist? And where are you going to be able to engage with them most comfortably and most effectively?
David, lots of our audience, you know, when we talk to them, you know, when we're talking with chiropractors or naturopaths, dentists, those kind of things, they tell me, we said, look, you know, choose your audience. They often head down this path of, I'm a chiropractor, I deal with spines. So I just want to talk with anyone that's got a spine, and Facebook is the biggest platform for that, so let me go there. Is that a wrong way of thinking, or might that be a wrong way of thinking? How would you guide somebody who came back and said, look, anyone that's got a spine is a patient of mine, let's just go to the big behemoth?
Yeah, the problem you have with going, I want to target anyone with a spine, is that you are instantly competing with a lot of other people across a wide range of industries. It is very difficult to be of interest and relevance to people of polarizing backgrounds and interests and hobbies. A lot of clients that I speak to and engage with, you know, that instantly, that their first reaction is that, oh, well, our product is universal. Anyone can be interested in our product. But when you start to actually talk about them, their brand, their tone, their style, what their existing client base is like, you do start to quickly find that actually they've naturally evolved into specific niches. Now, when setting up and when creating content campaigns for your social media, it is possible to shift from one to the other or to create different pieces of content for different audiences and to have different people in mind. But the important thing is that you do have someone in mind and that you're not just going, well, this can be of interest to anyone. Because if you have that broad brush approach, then in all likelihood, it's not really going to be of interest to any one person in particular. We have a client of mine, for example, is a jeweler. So he specializes in rings in particular, wedding rings, engagement rings, anniversary rings. Wide range of people there. Yeah, his target audience is anyone who is getting married or anyone who is married. It's quite a few people. So with him, we've kind of discussed in the past, okay, well, can we focus on different groups within that? Can we create an audience that's targeting a younger star-crossed lover audience? Or can we go over more traditionalist types? We ran a campaign for him. It was a paid ads campaign on Facebook. And because it was a paid ads campaign, we could be really specific with who we targeted. We ran a campaign specifically targeting men aged 45 plus who have an anniversary coming up in the next 60 days, whose relationship status is, it's complicated. So essentially we're targeting men who perhaps are maybe sleeping in the spare room. They need to do something extra special for their anniversary this year. We ran an advert to them saying, hey, do you want to get something special for your partner this year? Jeweler. They don't know they're being targeted because their wedding, you know, their whole marriage is on the rocks. But it was content that had a specific person in mind. And it's not alienating other people. But because it's got that specific audience in mind, you kind of know that, yes, it is going to resonate with at least a demographic.
Yeah, great. So let's go back to the example you gave before, because I like that. That, you know what, I'm interested in kind of sports recovery. That's kind of my thing there, injury prevention or helping people who are injured get back on the field as quickly as possible. I've made that decision. You've suggested that perhaps Instagram might be the platform that we start with. You know, is there a special way that I need to set up my Instagram account? You know, I've already got one for me personally, Angus Pike. Do I need to set one up for my chiropractic practice as well? You know, is there a way that I should set it up right from the beginning? Should it be a business account? Like, where do I go from there?
So with Instagram, it is good practice to have to separate your personal presence on social from your business. You know, we all have personal interests and hobbies. You might be interested in your spare time. You might be interested in, I don't know, taxidermy. That's not necessarily something that you're going to want to share with your chiropractic patients. It's an unusual mix, that one. It's not something that you want your patients to necessarily know. This is what you do if it goes wrong.
In war history or something like that.
Yes.
Yes, a slightly more classic example, perhaps. An interest that's not relevant to your audience. So it's always good practice to kind of separate the two. Even if kind of like your business, your brand is built around you as an individual. So personal trainers is a classic example. It's still a good practice to have that separate presence. Now, with Instagram, all accounts are created equal. You set up all accounts exactly the same way. So it's similar to Twitter in that respect. You don't set up a personal account that is then the manager of a business account. You log in separately to each individual account. What you can do with Instagram, though, is you can then convert your personal account into a business account. You essentially turn on business mode. Mm. What that does is it gives you access to a whole load of insights and analytics. So it will tell you things like what the age range of your audience is, where they're based geographically, what time of day they are most active on Instagram. It gives you access to the paid ads tools on Instagram as well, so you can start running some paid ads. And it also allows you to put in some call to action buttons on your profile. So an easy button for people to tap so they can call you or visit your website or send you an email. So all you need to do that is just go into the settings on Instagram, all on your phone. Instagram is a mobile tool through and through, so this is on your phone. just go into the settings on your profile, and there'll be an option there to switch your profile to business mode. It will ask you to connect it to a Facebook page. So Instagram does require you to connect to your Facebook business page, and that's a verification process just to verify that your business is legitimate. It doesn't mean that content that you post on Instagram is automatically going to go onto Facebook. It's purely a verification, identification thing, and it helps to pull through the insights and allows you to run ads across platforms at the same time. So to use this example that we're running with, even though Instagram would be your main platform, if you want to utilize all of the business features on Instagram, you would need to have a business page set up on Facebook.
Got it. Great. So we've got this idea. We want to be sports recovery. We're going to go on Instagram. We're going to set up our business page. We want to be creating relationships, as you said, not directly sort of advertising. So how do we go about that? What would be some concepts, some ideas that we could get our listeners to provide content that's valuable that these people want to see and watch and hear?
So the key thing is that as a social media, as a brand on social media, we want to give value. We want to give value and relevance to our audience. We want to give them content that gives them a reason to follow us and engage with us. Now, a classic example that I like to use is a traditional magazine. You flick through a magazine, you're turning pages, and you get to a page and it's a full page advert, usually for either car insurance or perfume, it seems most of the time. But you get to a full page advert. Subconsciously, you turn the page. You don't even really register that it's an advert. You just, your subconscious goes, ah, no, that's a promotional post, not interested, turn the page. We do the exact same thing on social media, except instead of turning the page, we're scrolling. We're sat there with our thumbs on our phones, scrolling the screen. What we want to do as content creators is create what we call thumb-stopping content. Content that stops us from scrolling, that makes us pause, look, and engage. Now, something that you get in magazines a lot more these days are advertorials. So they're paid for adverts, but they're dressed up and they're formatted to look like articles. They're specifically designed to look like a normal article so that you start reading it and you don't realize it's an advert until you're halfway through it. To take that analogy and translate it into social media, we're looking at creating content that doesn't explicitly sell you your brand, that doesn't explicitly say, this is a service that we're offering, but instead is something that's going to be interesting, that's relevant, that could have been posted by a friend or family member. So, for example, it might be, if we're using sports injury recovery, it might be a article about adjusting your diet to aid recovery. Mm. Now, that's not going to be something that you as a chiropractic clinic offer directly as a service. You're not going to do, you may not necessarily do meal plans. But if your target audience is someone who's got a sports injury or is interested in sports injury recovery, diet is going to be another aspect of that process that's going to be of interest and relevance to them. So you present that kind of content. It's content that doesn't directly promote you, but is of interest and of relevance to your audience. And what you're doing is you're building up that trust. You're building up that relationship, that rapport. You're demonstrating yourself to be an expert in your sector, an expert in your field, in your industry. Getting to a point where people trust you and go, ah, yeah, such and such, they're always posting great content about sports recovery. Oh, no, I've done my knee in. Actually, I think I did see something the other day about a service that they offer. I'm going to get in touch with them and see if they can help. So you do want to have those sales messages in there, but it needs to be buried, well, not buried, but it needs to be, you know, flanked on either side by content that is going to have a relevance. Now, this is an uncomfortable thing for a lot of marketers. They feel really uncomfortable about this notion of, hang on, why am I posting content that doesn't have a sales message, that doesn't have a call to action in it? And that's because they're used to advertising through television, magazines, posters, where you have to have that entire conversation on a single screen and a single touch point. Social media is a narrative, though. Social media is that narrative journey that takes place over a period of days, weeks, months. Therefore, it's okay to not have that sales message at that first point of contact. If we were meeting at a networking event, I wouldn't walk up to you immediately and go, hey, I'm David, I'm a social media trainer, want to book me for a session? We'd have a conversation beforehand. We'd build up that trust. And an ideal situation for me is that you would actually say to me, so what is it that you do? I explain it, and then you go, that sounds really interesting. Can you help me? Again, going back to this idea that we talked about earlier, that I'm not selling to you. You are choosing to buy from me. So you feel more comfortable with the process, and I don't come across as a cheesy salesman.
Is there a ratio of what we could think about, you know, one salesy or invitational type sort of post to five value-based posts? Can we kind of break it down to something like that? Or how would you suggest we go about that?
Yes, I mean, we typically look at the three main types of content. There's this value-adding content, there's this sales self-promotional content, and then the third type of content is direct interaction. So that is interacting and speaking to individual people, either people that have asked you questions or going out and finding other people that are talking, posting their own content and engaging with them. Generally, we like to say, you know, try and split it pretty evenly between the three. But as a general rule of thumb, I'd say no more than 40% of your content at most should be sales driven. The majority of it should be stuff that's focused on being of interest and being of relevance to your audience. You build up that trust, but over time they get those little messages in between that kind of go, oh, by the way, this is what we do.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that third type? This you said there that's conversational. What would be an example of that?
Yeah, so for example, an example of interaction content, it might be engaging with other bloggers, influencers, other people that work in your industry. So for example, as a, you know, to continue using this example of a sports injury recovery, it might be engaging with a high profile sporting celebrity who themselves are suffering from an injury and just replying to them, wishing them well. It might be running a search and using, with Instagram and Twitter in particular, you can do searches for a lot of content, identifying people who perhaps have an injury at the moment. Perhaps they're posting on Twitter, they're posting on Instagram, complaining about the fact that they can't practice this week because their leg's bandaged up. And again, engaging with them, not necessarily jumping and going, hey, can we help? But just, oh, that looks painful. Hope you get better soon. And it's those little friendly bits of conversation that might result in one of those people going, oh, I'll go have a look on their profile. I'm going to see what they're about. Oh, that's what they're about. Maybe they can help. We had a client that manufactured earphones. But they were, especially that they're wearable, so you could wear it as a bracelet, as a piece of jewelry, essentially, so that you could you'd never forget them. Because if there is one thing on the planet that we all hate, it's getting to the gym and realizing that you've left your headphones in the other bag, and you're going to have to spend the next hour listening to that awful piped through music, or the person next to you panting constantly. Nightmare scenario for all of us. And if we forget our headphones, the first thing we do is go on Twitter and complain about it because the world needs to know. For this brand, we just did a simple search, searching for the phrase, gym forgotten headphones. So just those three words, gym forgotten headphones. And we got a whole list of people in real time complaining about that very fact. And then we can just reply to them. And in some instances, we reply and go, oh no, nightmare, with our headphones. That's a problem of the past. And with others, it was a more softer value-adding approach. Oh no, nightmare. Bet you won't be forgetting them again anytime soon. It's just building up that conversation, getting yourself noticed by other people. Mm. We love getting notifications, especially those of us that perhaps have smaller audiences. Every like that we get on a piece of content that we put out, we go, oh, who's that? And we go and investigate their profiles. And that's what we're doing by having this interaction content, commenting on other people, liking their content. We're basically saying, with every notification they get with our username on it, it's a, hey, look at me, come and check my profile out. But it's very subtly done. And the user is more willing to do it because they've gotten something out of it. They've gotten a like, they've gotten a comment. You've helped to grow their own social presence.
Fascinating stuff, David. Comes to mind is that, you know, that kind of real world type person-to-person interaction and how that is just so relevant to the social world. You know, like how would you behave if you were face-to-face to someone? Well, you kind of just do a lot more of that on the socials. With regards to this relevant content, how often would we be doing it? How often are we putting out this content on the socials?
So it's a question that I get asked a lot. And as is the case with all questions I get asked a lot, there's no easy answer. Different platforms work in different ways. The algorithms these platforms all use vary and focus on different factors. So for example, Twitter's algorithm is far more heavily focused on the recency of a piece of content. So with Twitter, we're looking at ideally wanting to post at least 2-3 times a day, whereas something like Instagram or Facebook, it doesn't need to be as frequent, and in fact some people suggest that it should be less frequent. Now Facebook themselves have, to me, when I was last at Facebook's European headquarters, they said to me, a good starting point to aim for both Instagram and Facebook is 3 to 5 posts a week. Right. If you can manage 3 to 5 posts a week, that's a good starting point. About a month later, Facebook put out a press release in which they said, don't worry about posting too much. The algorithm will sort it out for you. And I've seen a study not too long ago that says actually posting 8-9 times a week gets you more interactions than if you post 4-5 times a week. So there isn't a set, this is the optimum number, which is really irritating actually. But what I suggest doing is just monitoring your analytics. Trying different frequencies. Go, right, this month I'm going to commit to posting 4 times a week. Next month I'm going to commit to posting 8 times a week. And you compare the analytics and see what the changes are. The biggest risk that you have with posting too frequently is that your content ends up in competition with itself. If you post on Facebook 4 times in one day, and I'm one of your fans, I follow you, Facebook's not going to show me all 4 pieces of content that have come from you. Facebook's going to choose 1, maybe 2 if you're lucky, to show me. The end result being that you've got 4 bits of content, each of them with, say, a dozen likes. Now, what would you rather have? 4 pieces of content with a dozen likes, or 1 piece of content that's got 40, 50 likes? You're going to want that content that's got that single piece of content with the more likes. The algorithm is going to look more favorably because that is just a better performing singular piece of content. So that is the risk that you do play if you do focus a bit too frequently. But yeah, try different frequencies out, but a good starting point for Facebook and Instagram is about 3 to 5.
Back to this question, where do hashtags fit in, particularly if we stick with this kind of whole Instagram sort of things there too? Are people searching with hashtags? Should I be putting hashtags as a part of my posts? What kind of hashtags might somebody use if they were focusing on an audience that was sports recovery as well? I'm a little confused by this, perhaps showing my 43 years of age here with, because as an Instagram consumer, though, I love using Instagram. I never use hashtags for my content. But are people using those to drive what content they're looking at, and how should we use them as a chiropractic practice?
So the biggest problem with hashtags is they are brutally abused.
Yes.
They are so heavily abused, they become just part of everyday conversation. It's just kind of like you say hashtag loving life, or you know, hashtag you know what it's like, and you just say the word hashtag for no real reason, almost just to indicate this is now my thought as opposed to what I was saying. So you get a lot of people that are misusing hashtags, which does muddy the water and confuse people as to actually what is the function of a hashtag. In its most simplistic term, a hashtag is a label. It is a label that is applied to a piece of content to categorize it so that other users know what it's about. People that have that shared interest know what it's about. And this is how it's been used traditionally on Twitter, where the hashtag originated. You know, if you were at a conference, then the organizers of the conference would say, oh, this is our hashtag. Everything you tweet, you put that hashtag in it. Everybody that's at the conference, they're searching for that hashtag so they can see what other people at the event are saying. When you have that as an example, it kind of makes sense what a hashtag does. Instagram does that as well, but Instagram has taken it one step further. And Instagram's algorithm, the search algorithms that determine what content I as a user see, that is fed and informed quite heavily by hashtags, by the hashtags I use and by the hashtags that I engage with. So, for example, I'm a big lover of craft beer and Scotch whiskey. Those are two of my main loves. So a lot of my content on my Instagram profile is pictures of whiskey. So I use hashtag whiskey in them. Now, a lot of people that post using hashtag whiskey, they will post other things as well. One of the most common accompaniments to whiskey is a cigar. Now, personally, I only smoke when I'm on fire. So cigars have no real interest or relevance to me. But a lot of people that post saying hashtag whiskey also say hashtag cigar. So Instagram has looked at my behavior and it's gone, ah, David says hashtag whiskey a lot. A lot of other people that use that hashtag also talk about cigars. Let's show him some pictures of cigars and see if he engages with them. And that's what happened to me for a while. I was seeing lots of pictures of cigars. I didn't engage with them. Instagram got the message and stopped showing me those images. So there is elements of machine learning around hashtags as well as actual users as well. Now, in terms of using them on Instagram, my best advice I have is to search for a few main hashtags, kind of your basic themes: sports injury, sports recovery, muscle injury, bone injury, these kind of basic keywords. Instagram will do two things. It will tell you how many other posts are out there that are using that hashtag, but it will also throw up a list of similar hashtags, so recommended similar hashtags that you might also be interested in. So use this as a means to build up a list and a bit of a back catalogue as to these are the common ones that we use. Now, ideally, we want to use a mixture of really, really popular hashtags, so ones that have been used millions and millions of times. But if we use just those, then our content is going to be a drop in the ocean. So we also want to use hashtags that aren't quite so popular, so in the tens of thousands of use, so that that content stays current, stays nearer the top for longer. So we want a mixture in terms of popularity. Now, in the caption on an Instagram post, when you post something on Instagram, in the caption, you are capped to 30 hashtags. That is your limit. And that's the key thing. That is a limit, not a challenge. So I generally say, you know, a good number to aim for is about a dozen. A dozen to 15 hashtags is a good number of hashtags to try and use in the post. Something that people ask a lot is, well, should the hashtags go in the caption or should I comment? You see it a lot. You see a lot of brands, they don't put any hashtags in the caption. They, in fact, just put them in the first comment. The idea being is that they're hiding the hashtags. They're trying to stop the post look too spam-like. There has been various studies to try and work out which is more effective. The results have been completely inconclusive. A lot of it comes down to personal style. But there are rumours going around, we should say, well, it's the end of September now. There have been rumours and there have been some screenshots going around that Instagram is actually testing a brand new feature that means that you can apply hashtags to a post without needing to add them into either the caption or into a comment. So it's going to be a completely separate field in the same way that you can tag your location. You'll be able to add hashtags separately. They're just testing it at the moment. I've not had a go at it myself, but I've seen various screenshots online of people that have got access to this test. So the question of should hashtags go into caption or comment, it could be a complete moot point by the end of the year. We don't know yet.
So just to further expand on that too, in terms of how this works, because my understanding here too with Instagram, Instagram is only going to show me the content of the people who I've liked. It's in terms of pages or friends that I've liked it too. But what you're saying, for instance, if I'm always posting hashtag taxidermy, as we found out beforehand, and Tony is somebody whose content I like to watch, and then Tony's also posting hashtag taxidermy, his content is more likely to show up in my feed because I've shown a liking for that. Is that how you're saying that's kind of working there? Is that am I got that right, or am I missing something?
Yeah, well, there's two levels to this. So if you're already following each other, then yes, if Instagram detects common themes in content, then it's going to go, I'm going to prioritize this content because it is of an interest that, you know, it's talking about a subject that you've shown an interest in. There's no possible way that you can see all of the content posted by all the people you follow. So Instagram needs to prioritize what to show you. One of the factors it considers is how aligned is that content to the kind of stuff that you're posting. But there are ways in which your content can be discovered by people that don't follow you. So you can now, it's been available for a few months, you can follow specific hashtags now. So you can choose to subscribe and follow a hashtag so that as a user in your newsfeed, you see random posts from people, but from people that you don't follow, but have used that hashtag that you're tracking. You've then also got the Discover tab, which is the magnifying glass icon. You tap on that. Most people think that's just the search bar. But if you tap on it, it immediately pulls up a whole load of content from people that you're not connected to, but that Instagram has gone, based on who you interact with, based on what you post yourself, we think you might be interested in this content. So there are a number of touch points in Instagram that present an opportunity for you to discover new content and new people to engage with. So as a business, as a brand, there are opportunities for you organically, completely free, to get your content out to new people, which is a feature that has been somewhat lacking of late on Facebook, but is something that does still exist and thrive on Instagram.
So are you, do you, the Discover tab, do you look at that and find content from there? No, neither do I. I mean, I realize that's kind of what's happening. I tend to look through my feed. I use little magnifying glass if I just want to check in. I haven't, you know, I've got a friend who's traveling at the moment. I wonder what Dr. Kirby's up to. Her feeds, I'll go in there too. But so people are engaging and looking at content through that Discover tab as well.
There you go.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. A lot of people, they want to grow their personal following. They want to get more followers. And an easy way to get more followers is to engage with other people. I like your post. You get that notification. Oh, Old Man Glennis has liked my post. Who's this? You click on that notification. You go through to my profile. You go, huh, wow, that Old Man Glennis is a dashingly handsome young man. I'm going to give him a follow. I'm going to like his content. It's that you scratch my back, I scratch yours relationship. So a lot of people do use the Discover tab to find content and to find users, not only that they're interested, but that they think will be interested in their own content. So it does present a great opportunity.
Got it. So might this be a strategy? I go in that Discover tab, I look in there, I do a search for, let's say, hashtag knee pain. I look through there, I get a list of all the people who've got knee pain there. I could go in and like their pages and say, Tony, and it could be a combination from me just saying, ah, dude, so sorry to hear about your knee, from those kind of things, to, oh, dude, so sorry to hear about your knee. Here's an article that I found that talks about the best five foods that you could eat that might naturally decrease inflammation in your knee. Or it could be Dude, so sorry to hear about your knee. If you need a hand, I deal with these kind of things all the time. Would love to help out. DM me, I can give you some advice or call the office on this. Are they different ways that I could start to build relationships and stuff like that? Would that work, or what are your thoughts with that as a strategy?
Exactly. That's spot on. Yeah, it's about being an active part of the community. I think when you're first starting out, my advice tends to be focus on the more value-adding side of things. So just, oh, sorry to hear that, rather than trying to push that sales message. You know, to use this example, if you have got a knee injury and you're in a lot of pain and discomfort, you're probably not going to take too kindly to random strangers commenting on your content going, hey, I can fix that, give me a call, DM me. You'll probably respond a bit more positively to genuine sympathy, concern, or helpful advice. The one caveat I would say with that strategy of stressing there, when we're looking at Instagram specifically, is that you can't include URLs in comments. So you can't have working web links in your comments. But what you might say is, sorry to hear that, I've just posted some top tips around meal planning and dealing with your injury. Check out my profile, you can see them on there. So kind of signposting people to go to your profile, and you maybe shared that as five separate posts over the course of the last 2 weeks, each post giving a different top tip. So it's a good way to signpost people to get over onto your platform, onto your profile, and start engaging with you as well.
Absolutely. Yep. David, you mentioned earlier on that there may be some changes coming with Instagram as we're recording this podcast now. There's been some news just in the last 24 hours. Can you take us through that and what the implications might be for it?
Yeah, so it has been an interesting 24 hours for Instagram. Kevin Systrom and Mike Krieger, the founders of Instagram the chief executive officer and chief technical officer, they have both resigned with immediate effect. It's not, although it's a bit of a surprise and it's taken people aback, at the same time, it's supposedly not that big a shock that it was going to happen sooner or later. They started Instagram way back in 2010. In 2012, Facebook bought Instagram, and they paid a lot for it. They paid $1 billion for Instagram, for a platform that at the time wasn't that big. Fast forward to 2018, Instagram has over 1 billion users. It's more than three times the size of Twitter in terms of users. So it was a wise investment from Facebook. But Facebook said when they bought it, they weren't just buying the technology, they were buying the culture. They were buying the community that exists around Instagram. Supposedly, the two founders of Instagram have felt in the last year or so that Facebook have been encroaching on that more and more and more, and that they've been pushing Instagram in a direction that goes away from the values of Instagram and what Instagram is all about. A big example of that was the introduction of Instagram Stories as a tool that replicated what happened on Snapchat. And we've seen more and more and more. We've seen that Facebook features like adverts have become more prominent on the Instagram platform. Now, the guys that have left, they've said that they're leaving to focus on exploring creativity again. They've kind of intimated in a way that they're not happy with the direction that Instagram is being taken. They want to remove themselves from it and focus on something different. That's interesting. What's more interesting is who will take their place. It's early days as we're recording this, but the belief is that the guy that's going to be taking over Instagram is a chap by the name of Adam Mosseri. Now, Adam currently is the head of product for Instagram, but before that, he was the guy responsible for overseeing the team that developed Facebook's newsfeed. a tool and a product that has been a bit contentious at times over its exploitation and of businesses, and essentially, you know, people have criticized Facebook for becoming too heavy, brand heavy, and drifting away from that community focus. It will be interesting to see if Adam is named CEO of Instagram, what now happens with the Instagram platform. Will we see more adverts on Instagram? Possibly. Will we see a introduction of more business tools so that business profiles stand out more on Instagram in the way that business pages do on Facebook? Possibly. It is very early days at the moment, but at a time where growth on Facebook itself is starting to stagnate, and Instagram really is the golden boy of the Facebook empire, there is a question as to whether they'll try and exploit that. I don't think they will. Personally, honestly, I don't think that they will do that. I think they know when they have a good thing in front of them. I think it would be short-sighted of them to completely and utterly destroy the community and the concept that they built with Instagram. But there will be a lot of concern over what will happen next, especially at a time when Instagram has rolled out a lot of features recently. But it's going to be an interesting couple of months, that's for sure.
Watch this space for sure. There you go. You got it straight from the horse's mouth, as we say. But I think we're running out of time here, David. I'm really, really thankful for your taking your time at this late hour of the evening over where you are in the UK. And always a great pleasure chatting with you. Final thoughts, David. Where do people contact you? How do people get on to you, find you on the socials, Old Man Glimmers?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at Old Man Glenners, usually complaining about something on Twitter and usually posting something about beer on Instagram. I'm a creature of habit, I am. But if you are keen to kind of learn more, if you want to develop your own learning in the meantime, especially around Facebook and Instagram, I would really recommend checking out Facebook Blueprint. Facebook Blueprint is a e-learning platform that Facebook has developed themselves. It's free to sign up to. It's all e-learning modules that you can sit and go through at your own pace. You can focus on specific elements that you want to focus on, whether it's paid ads or managing groups. You can run it at your own time. You can go back and repeat the courses. But it's specifically designed by Facebook to be that introduction to Facebook and Instagram for new and growing businesses. So if you haven't checked that out already, I would really recommend going and having a look at that.
Great. Sounds wonderful. David, thanks so much for sharing with us so generously today. I've personally learned lots. I got a better understanding now of how I might start to use some hashtags personally and the ADO media content that we shared as well. So thank you so much. We'll let you get your way back to your whiskey now, not your cigar though as well. So thanks again for sharing with our audience. We look forward to perhaps a round three sometime down the track, and probably when this posts here, we'll actually work out how good David is at your predictions for Instagram yes. as well. So I look forward to seeing how good you are with the crystal ball.
If I get it wrong, we can just edit it out though, right?
We'll change the name in there. Tony will do his very best English accent to kind of dub over the top of it there as well. So we can see what kind of happens from there too. So until next time, buddy, thanks so much for sharing so generously with us too. See you soon.
Cheers, guys. Absolute pleasure. Take care.